Blog Talk Radio.
New.
Hey, good evening, podcast audience. Was that a little better than the music, Robert?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, all right. I tried to find a hot disco tune for you, but that's just a standard opening now. Hey, but good evening. This is Ken Hodge, and I'm right here with my right-hand guy, Robert Frost. And welcome to the Kenny and Rob Injury Compensation Podcast Hour. Tonight, we're probably going to be joined by Chris and Jeannie, but I apologize. I spoke with them earlier in the week about coming on with us tonight. But then I had a little situation up in New Jersey I had to tend to, and I didn't coordinate it all the way through. So they may join us tonight, but if they don't, I'm sure we'll get together next week, or I'll join them tomorrow night on their podcast, on their live Facebook app. But here we go. As always, I like to take the... let me rephrase that opening statement. It seems more times than not, rather than always, we like to grab the controversial and try to simplify it for employees. And right now, I want to tell you that it's crazy the amount or the number of times postal employees or federal employees are being injured at work and are given no recourse. And I'm telling you, I just think that's terrible. When you study federal laws, it dictates that postal management is responsible for ensuring that your claims get filed. They treat some of your claims as if you are awarded any compensation, it's personally coming out of their paycheck. And I don't understand that thought process. That's a very elementary and juvenile thought process. But I'll tell you what you do. You keep tuning in to the Kenny and Rob Injury Comp Podcast, and I guarantee you, we'll show you ways that we're going to force management to do what it is they're supposed to do. Hey, good evening. How are we doing this evening?
Good. It's Chris Helms. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Chris? As soon as you said good, we recognize that deep voice, man. I have to modify my equalizers to try to get my voice to sound that deep. Hey, well, good evening, Chris. How you doing?
Doing really good. Thank you.
All right. And like I said, you know, right now we just we get together every Tuesday night. We want to talk to employees about what's going on. And I got to tell you, I caught a little bit of your podcast, of your live Facebook on what to do if managers don't file your claims. And I got to tell you, what I had to invite you on because there's excerpts from that I would love this audience to hear also. Now that I got you, and I know you're a busy guy, can you give me a summary, a quick synopsis of what's going on when management won't file your claims? What are some of your rights or some of the recourses that you have?
Well, so number one, your rights as far as being able to file a claim are absolute. What management does too often is they get involved in the claims adjudication process when the law just says to managers basically, hey, do your job, fill out page 2 of the form and give them the receipt of notice. And it says specifically, give the employee a copy of everything. So the next thing management does is they say, well, I don't want to give you a copy or I don't have to give you a copy. When the regulations actually specifically say give them a copy of everything. And so lots of times managers will say, well, I don't want to have a work injury claim on my, in my office, so I'm not going to help you. And so that's I don't want to say it's against the law because that's a sticky little thing to say, but it's definitely opposite of the law. So, when people get hurt, they're required to report their injury to their supervisor. Well, then the third thing down on the CA-10 form says, and fill out a CA-1 or CA-2. And so what I'm telling people is take that CA-10 form to your supervisor and say, look, I need to do this. I want to follow these five steps here that are in the law. And when that happens, that does take away some of these problems because it's awfully hard for supervisors to say, well, I see the law written right in front of me, and I'm going to disobey it. So that's a really good first step. And then, of course, unions are an excellent step because, you know, you guys can file grievances and kind of push back where, you know, a typical employee can't alone. So that's what's going on. Now, there's also a debate on who do you contact. So OSHA has been something that's been told to me, and I think the number is 800-321-OSHA. I think that's the number you call to file a complaint. And also, I had a union president in Florida. The union president's the one that told me about OSHA. The lawyer, Eric, said also if it's a federal postal employee, you can also contact the postal inspector. And so those are a couple of things that you can do outside of filing grievances and making supervisors aware of the law. Oftentimes, they're just not aware of the law.
I appreciate that. And it's very important that people know. Excuse me one second. Yeah, it's very important that federal employees, or in my particular case, postal employees, are fully aware of the fact that management is not doing you a favor by allowing you to fill out these forms. Okay, that's a right. And I'm going to segue real quick because one issue popped up to me three times last week. And before I forget, I want to put it out there. Can you tell me, Chris, what is the exact amount of time an employee has to file a CA-1?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because the answer applies to CA-2 as well. It's 3 years.
Outstanding.
Okay, 3 years from date of injury. 3 years. So what they get told too many times is, well, you missed your 30-day window. Well, what the heck is a 30-day window? You know, I have three years.
Hey, Robert, go ahead and talk about that 30-day window, please.
Well, I have one of the people I'm helping with their CA-1, the supervisor said, you have to file a CA-2 because you missed your 30-day window.
Oh, good Lord. That's a new one. I love it.
Yeah, so I will get back with her and tell her to push the CA-1.
See, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the claims examiners are actually charged with, in their handbook, with changing incorrect reported injuries to the correct form. So say you turn in a CA-2 and it should have been a 1. The claims examiner is actually responsible for turning it into a CA-1. And so even if the wrong form goes in, the claims examiner is supposed to fix it. But you know what ends up happening is they just send a denial. And because it's impossible to prove a CA-2 claim when it was a 1. It's impossible. And so it's inevitably, or, you know, it's definitely going to get denied. But, no, you have 3 years. And also it's on a CA-2 form, on a, you know, any injury that happens over two or more shifts, like carpal tunnel syndrome, you have 3 years from the date that you reasonably knew that it was work-related. So let that set in, because, you know, maybe you're like me and you're walking around with knee pain and back pain every day for the last 2 years. And I wake up today, I go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you know, what do you do in your life other than your job? Well, nothing. You know, I'm not physically active. Well, did you ever consider that maybe this pain you've experienced for the last 2 years is because of your job? And then the light bulb turns on and says, oh, yeah, this is work-related. Well, now I have 3 years to report my injury. So,
you know,
the window's wide open. Almost anybody can report an injury and have it accepted.
Knowledge is so much power. Because,
for sure.
Again, I'm listening to what you said, Chris, and when you said that the claims examiner is responsible for turning that over to another form, after this, I'm going to ask you to send me that in writing, because anytime you send anything in that's not 100% correct, they're just going to deny it. So,
if we
understand that they're responsible, well, guess what? When they deny it again because it's on the wrong form, we can hold them accountable now. Again,
right.
If you know the rules to the game is fairly simple.
It's really
easy. If you know the rules to the game.
Right.
And while I have you here, Chris, we're going to pick your brain a little bit tonight, but we have a growing a growing concern in our facility, where it's just management just sometimes flat out refuse to give employees CA forms. We have accidents that take place in our facility that sometimes just don't go reported. And then once the employee becomes aware that there was paperwork or action that should have followed, management says it's too late.
So, you know, that's a double-edged sword. Listen to what I heard today. So I heard a guy, I don't know where it was located, but it was definitely a postal employee, who was being fired for not reporting the injury. How about that? And so I said, well, you definitely want to go to your union and have a conversation about that one. You have 3 years to report it. So, you know, that could be a problem for you, too. I hadn't heard of that one before. Usually they love it when you don't report, but this particular one, I think, just had it out for the employee.
Well, you know, it's funny because if I have, and it gives you something to think about, because in the post office, I'm going to tell you, if you have an accident today and you don't report it for a week, not even saying 3 years, when you report it, if management realizes that they're at fault, they're going to take disciplinary action on you for failing to report that immediately, which now I have to say, if the federal law says I have 3 years, how can you write me up for failure to follow instructions? I don't understand that.
Well, that's right. And if management tries to take action against you because they did something wrong, then that is definitely an OSHA situation, right? There's a workplace safety issue there. And so because they're not allowed to take any kind of negative action on you for reporting injuries. They're just not allowed to do it. And so they need to just, you know, suck it up and do the right job. And when they don't want to give you the forms, another thing that was just told to me by Eric, the lawyer, he said, listen, you know, it's supposed to originate with management, of course. The CA-1 and CA-2 should originate there. But when they refuse to do it, you have an obligation to report your injury. And there's only one way to do it. It's with those forms. And so go ahead and just go get one yourself, you know, print it out, fill out page one, and submit it to your supervisor. Because guess what? They have 10 days to turn that into DOL now. And when they don't do it, then now they're in violation of, you know, some other rules, which, for example, if you go to about.usps.com, there are some penalties for failure to process a claim. And if they don't process that claim, they can be fined $500 or imprisoned for a year. So I like to show them that. But that's on your own website.
Now, let me say this to you, Chris, and I hear what you're saying. Hey, but, hey, Robert.
Yes.
Let's you and I visit a magical land, because we are definitely not talking about Columbus, Ohio, City Gate processing plant. I want to make this clear. We are... Let's say I had an injury, Robert, and I brought it to the supervisor. Let's say the injury hypothetically happened maybe 2 years ago, and I bring it to my supervisor. And do you think it's possible my supervisor will refuse to accept my forms? You think that could ever happen?
Well, considering it's happened twice, twice this week. No, of course not.
Okay, all right.
I'm glad you segued into that, Kenny, because I wanted to ask Chris, what happens when the supervisor refuses to accept his page of the form and refuses to sign the receipt for it?
So, I don't think anybody's ever been prosecuted for this, and that's the problem. I don't think anybody's ever taken this all the way to the max. But what needs to happen is, especially for USPS, if they're going to go out of their way, I think it's like I-42.33. I don't know. That number is sticking out in my head, failure to process a claim. If that penalty is going to be in writing on your website, somebody should enforce it. I think that's probably a postal inspector issue, but somebody should do it because the law is clear. The law is – it clearly says, listen, supervisors, fill out your portion, give them the receipt and a copy of everything. It says specifically a copy of page 1 and 2. And so when it says to do that, they have to do it. It says the supervisor shall do that, which is unequivocal. It just shall do it. There's no room for, not doing it. They have to do it. But if the penalty exists, let's have someone get penalized for it. And once, if we can get someone to be penalized for it, let's, you know, publicize the heck out of it. And let's make them famous. You know, at some point, it's got to stop. So if the law tells them to do it, and there's a penalty for not doing it, somebody's going to have to push that. I think that's in the court of the unions to push that.
And, again, because it happens with such consistent frequency in some places, again, definitely not Columbus, Ohio, Citygate, but it happens in so many other places that we may be the test site for that. Because you're right. I think when management understands that it is their responsibility to make sure that these claims are filed, if we don't hold them accountable, they'll never be accountable.
That's right.
Yeah, because again, I
don't want to see anybody get in trouble. I'm not interested in seeing supervisors go to jail. I don't want to see any of that stuff. I just like all the nonsense to stop. And I don't know how to do that if somebody doesn't get hit for it.
I think, and I'm trying to research this right now, what I'm going to do is notify a few of the supervisors who've been doing this. I'm going to print out the form, and I'm going to hand deliver it to them. And then if they still insist on not doing what they're supposed to, I'm going to recommend that the employee go to the union and then start filing, I can't tell them they have to, but recommend that the injured worker file with an attorney. Or, well, actually, better yet would be to go to the postal inspector, as Chris said. We'll start that way.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go.
Again, we got a new caller on, too. How you doing, caller? Okay, 813.
Oh, that's me. I was just listening.
Hey, what's going on, Jeannie? How you doing?
Oh, nothing. I'm trying to get everybody to hop on and listen. That's what I've. Oh, I just okay. Have you back. Sorry.
Okay, all right. I just seen the number come up, but again, we're going over some of the things that Chris talked about last week with management failure to just comply with basic things as far as getting you a form, making sure your accident is reported. And let me tell you, I do a lot of EEOs until I get sworn in as local president. So I do spend a lot of time doing EEOs. And this comes up a lot, whereas you got injured people at work for years, and management never did an accident report, never explained a CA form to them. And I got to tell you, being a former manager, you know, we all make mistakes in life. I empathize why it never happens. Because right now the post office has got those supervisors they string them so thin that in order for that supervisor to take time from the operation to get you the necessary CA forms and emergency treatment that you need, that means he's out of his operation. And they've got him so fooled that they actually think that if they're not in their operation, nothing is going to take place. Again, once they get rid of that nonsense, they may be a little better. But that's one of the reasons why they're afraid to leave their work unit to go take care of you, because they think if they leave, their production is going to go down, and then the big boss is going to come in and step on their head. So when you look at the lesser of two evils, they subconsciously make the choice that we'll get you some treatment later, but I got to stay in this operation right now. And I offer that as a reason, not an excuse, because let me tell you, I'll be the first in line contacting the postal inspection service or the OIG if I'm representing somebody that the agency failed to give them the proper CA forms. So while I say that as a reason, I don't understand the reason. I don't accept the reason. That's just an excuse that's being used. But again, in Columbus,
yeah,
it's like they're famous for not wanting to give you CA forms. And again, I just don't quite understand how they arrived at that thought process, but they're all there. So I want you to know, we have podcasts like this. I invite professionals on that give us real information, not that watered-down stuff that your supervisors get and give to you. So, you know, you gotta get active, folks. And when you have these kind of podcasts, when I've got professionals like Jeannie and Chris here giving us information, now's the perfect time for you to take advantage of it.
So hey, let me say one more thing about this to the supervisors, and I think everyone should pass this message along to them, that, you know, if they have a problem filling out the CA-1 form, all they got to do is go to the second page of that form, and there are three or four places that they can express their problems. You know, it asks them specifically, you know, what problems they have. Let them say it right there. But there's a penalty for false statements. And the penalty for a false statement is more stringent than a penalty for not processing the claim. You can go to jail for 5 years.
Hey, Chris, I don't think that their problem is. Yeah, I don't think that their problem is filling out the form. I think their problem is just getting to the form.
Like not being able to find one?
No, just not wanting to go and get the form.
I hear you.
They don't want to have anything to do with an injury.
They look at that as that's personally going to affect their next promotion to Grand Postmaster General if they have injuries in their unit. So it ain't a problem of them not understanding how to fill it out. They just don't understand that it's imperative that you do it.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Kenny,
go ahead, bro.
Chris.
Yes, sir.
I think something that would help our listeners is... you've said that Chris and Jenny are professionals. What do you actually do? I mean, I don't know if we're allowed to say the name of your company or what, but what do you actually do for injured workers?
So I'm glad you asked. So I have a background of 20-plus years actually in operations for medical offices that specialize in federal workers' comp. I have an MBA, and I've been involved in getting more than 2,000 OWCP claims accepted in my time doing this. So I've got a pretty good track record. And we're not really good at getting denials. Just that's for other people. But what we do is, number one, that we get claims accepted. Number two, we offer free advice to both doctors and federal employees. The reason we do that with doctors is because, as you know, there are not nearly enough of them, right, that are willing to do this or understand it. And so when we are able to teach doctors to do this, then it gives federal employees an option that can get a claim accepted. And then that's how we actually got started. But then we realized that, okay, great, we've trained the doctors, but the employees still don't understand what their role is. And so they don't know how to become patients for those doctors, you know, to be able to help them. And so that's how we got into the business of training employees. That's why we go to union meetings. That's why we do our Facebook Live events. That's why I'm on the phone with you right now. And so we like to connect the doctors with the people who need those doctors, because you can go to any doctor. That's your right. Your choice of doctor is absolute as well. But, you know, most doctors, like 90% of them, will definitely get your claim denied. And so we've spent a lot of time, and we've trained 25 doctors around the country to do federal workers' comp. And it's a nice public service, but it's hard. And so many doctors run from this. And so the ones that say yes, you know, we like for the people to be able to find them and stop having denied claims. So that's what we do.
It's funny when you ask that question because Chris and Jeannie are like the rock stars, man, of injury compensation. When you said that, I thought everybody just knew who they were already. But excellent question, though. I was in New Jersey this weekend, and somebody mentioned that their podcast. Well, yesterday.
Really?
I was in New Jersey. Yeah. Oh yeah. You guys are definitely out there, man. so when I said,
well,
you guys are the rock
stars.
And here's the word that's being spread. The word that's being spread is simply, hey, listen, if you are a federal employee and you are injured at work, there are recourses that you have. Your whole economic structure does not have to be turned upside down if you understand the process. If you understand on your CA-1 form, and again, reading and studying, you always learn something new. there really should be no interruption in your pay. You have those 3 days, those first 3 days, if you're going to use the 45 days COP, I'm talking on the CA-1 now. The first
right.
3 days are your leave, and then your COP should kick in automatically. And if it is denied, then they come back and try to recoup it through annual leave or some other, you owe them money fund. But as far as them not paying you, that's federally not accepted.
That's right.
And again, and as I read these forms and I see that, I mean, how many people know that? How many people in the post office today have gotten injured on a CA-1 and missed paychecks? That shouldn't happen.
Everybody
most,
that I know.
Most of them.
So,
yeah,
and again,
everyone that I know.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris,
but,
I've got a...
Go ahead, bro.
I'm sorry. I've got another question. For using a delayed claim for the CA-1, for example, say 2.5, almost 3 years, is that employee still entitled to COP?
No, you're only entitled to COP if you report your CA-1 injury within 30 days of the injury. If you
okay,
report
that's
it
for the 30,
anytime
that's
after 30
yes.
days, you're not. But you
okay,
can still be paid using your CA-7 claim for compensation.
Right. That's
and
that's
you see
where the 30 days is coming from,
yeah,
I think, Kenny.
That's where the 30 days are coming from for the COP.
Yeah.
And that's why management is telling everybody if you're after 30 days, because, again, they don't understand that after 30 days, you just give up COP. You don't give up your right to file that claim. You still have
well, and
years
maybe you're not going to be off of work anyways. You know, maybe your doctor is going to keep you at work with restrictions. That's super common. I mean, every doctor that I know actually efforts to send patients back to work instead of keeping them out of work because they know that there are fewer problems with management when they go to work. And so they'll just give them restrictions so they can't re-injure themselves or hurt themselves worse and send them back to work. But then guess what management does? We don't have anything for you. Or they want a carrier to go be a clerk. And I know how everyone loves that. So, but, you know, you may not be off of work anyways. So maybe COP is not even an issue. But you still want your injury covered.
Yes.
And again, we've got that's why I keep saying I'll be very very I'll be one happy person when you guys do reach out and cover that Ohio area because the folks here are thirsty for proper guidance on injuries. I mean when you do come to Ohio when we set that meeting up you'll probably be amazed at some of the stories you hear as far as people getting hurt at work. And management doing absolutely nothing about it.
Yeah, and you know, sadly, I hear it all the time, all the time, and a lot out of the Postal Service, nationwide, everywhere I go.
Yeah, it's a real sad state of affairs, and it doesn't have to be. And management, if they would understand that if you would process these claims promptly, you would probably increase the probability of that employee coming back to work sooner.
Let me tell you something. I wrote an article about this a couple of years ago about management and how they can make or break the employment relationship. And so there's research out there that says that every person's the most important person in every employee's life, regardless of industry, regardless of where you work, is their immediate supervisor. The immediate supervisor can make or break the employment relationship. And too often they break it because they treat people badly. Well, when you refuse to process a claim, you're treating someone bad. Okay? When you threaten someone's job because they want an injury, you're treating them bad. But what's happening is you're causing resentment with the employee. That resentment is going to circle back around to what appears to be poor performance. That's going to make the manager more unhappy because performance is bad, which makes the employee more unhappy. Look, all of this can be avoided. It's all completely avoidable. All you've got to do is just do your job. And if the supervisor will just do their job, they would be better supervisors, and they would be more highly rated by employees, and employees would be more productive and better employees as a result. But
and it's
who's really a good employee when they're treated bad? Nobody. Doesn't matter where you work.
And it's funny you mentioned that the paper you wrote, because let me tell you something. On the national level, that is the plan of the Postal Service, to have that direct interaction between that immediate supervisor and the employee. But what happens is, as it starts to water down from your national level to the plant in which you work in, management gets creative and creates such things like, in our case, the attendance control supervisor. That's not a real position. And what that does,
it's not needed.
It takes away the interaction between that immediate employee, and their immediate supervisor. And once you start to nibble away at it from that perspective, and then everybody can move everybody around from that perspective, what happens is the employee, you don't have immediate supervisor, and that interrelationship is missing, and that's vital to industry today.
And why do you need an attendance control anything? If you treat people good, they want to attend work. Everybody loves to go where they're happy to be. If I'm happy to be at work, I want to go to work. You know, and I have, like I said, over 20 years of management experience, and I don't ever remember having an attendance problem, ever, because people are happy to work for me. When you treat people with love and respect, they show up and they do a good job for you. And that's missing in management, especially, you know, like what we're talking missing.
And one of the reasons it's missing, and again, with injury comp and so many other things, is management fails to realize that we've got a different workforce. The new generation is in the workforce today, and all that barking orders, that's not the way to motivate and improve relationships. But they haven't got the new teaching manuals yet, because they still operate in that same manner. But you know, again, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, sorry about that. I always say, I'd love to do management training. I would personally love to do it, but they wouldn't like it very much. And because there's some hard truths, and there's a lot of looking in the mirror that has to be done, a lot of it. And there's this book called Good to Great. It's a real famous book. And Jim Collins, in the book, he does this multi-year survey over across industries and everything, and compares good companies to great companies. And the leaders in great companies had a thing where he called looking in the mirror. So he said, we look in the mirror for failure and look out the window for success. So if something goes wrong, it's my fault. When something goes right, it's their fault. And don't take the credit from them. Let them have it, because what you're as a leader, what do you want? More productivity. So blame yourself. If you have a problem, blame yourself. You did it. It's your fault. And that's a lesson that doesn't go over well with people that have, you know, inferiority complexes or have a problem being defensive, or, you know, the Peter principle, we're promoted to a point of incompetence anyways, and maybe we'll never be good.
Well, again, we've been surviving as an industry, post office, but again, there's changes that they can make. And just the way they handle people, the way they address issues, would make their company more successful. But they like to put out slick little slogans, let's work smarter, not harder. But they don't understand what that means. That's just some cool things that they say.
Well, I say to them, you first.
And you know, again, leadership will set the speed at which the pack is going to travel. And
that's
if
right.
if you have management who won't come to work, or you have management getting hurt at work and not having proper documentation, because when the manager received an injury, they didn't process their paperwork right, what happened subliminally is you just taught that manager how to process the employee's claims, and it's not going to be done right. So again, if you treat yourselves right, you'll treat others right. And if you train your managers and let them know that it's not an option for you to ensure that an injured employee is satisfied with the proper medical attention, that's not an option for you. If the post office makes it mandatory, they will comply with it. But as with anything else, if the leader don't really care, then the followers understand it's okay not to perform.
Well, it's a top-down issue, and, you know, it's not even at the postmaster level. Who do the postmasters report to? That's where it starts.
Yep.
Yes.
Can I give an example?
Sure.
I started with the post office about 5 years ago, and they did a survey about 6 years ago, and ranked each postal location. Our plant was rated 7 out of 190, I think it was, locations. Today, we're ranked below 85.
That sounds bad to me.
It is very bad.
Chris said, I don't understand how that scale works, but that don't sound good, man.
And right about 6 years ago, the current plant manager was brought in to improve the standing because they wanted our location to be in the top 3.
Well,
and we're below 85.
Well, but and you would think that a change that drastic would have to send red lights off on some hire some district manager or some regional manager's desk to say, hey, what's going on down there? And you see, just the fact that we've dropped so low, apparently it's not a big issue to folks because I don't see any major changes taking place. In fact, I actually see it getting worse. So if upper management don't care enough to say, wait a minute, there's something not right in this facility, and a team come in, not for a day, and maybe spend some time there and try to find out what's really going on, until that approach is taken, we'll continue to slip.
The only way they can do that, Kenny, is to have people come in undercover. Because if the management knew about it, they'd steer them away and wouldn't give them any true information. I've already seen that happen.
Well, again, I've been on teams that go into office to get information. And after we talk to management, for some reason, I guess it's just in my nature, where you steer me away from is where I'm pretty much going to gravitate to. Because I understand the information I need is over there where you don't want me to go. But again, that all depends on the interest or the true intent of the team coming in. But we got a new caller on here. Let me acknowledge him. Hey, good evening, caller. How you doing? That is a 262 area code. Okay.
I think they're just calling in to listen because they're having a problem with the going on to the actual site.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when it's live, they have to call in. Then after we finish this, they can always go back and download it.
Okay. Yeah. So they're just probably listening because they saw the post that I posted.
Okay. And again, a lot of our live conversation. Once we finish, it gets downloaded a couple hundred times through Blog Talk, which is a good thing. Which is a good thing. Hey, but I do thank you, Chris and Jeannie. It's always a pleasure to have you guys on because, again, right now, when it comes to injury compensation, I hear your names a lot, and I've not yet heard anybody say that they're unhappy with some of the advice or the doctors that you sent them to. So,
well, thanks. I'm really glad to hear that. And let me tell you something. You know, a segue from the last thing you said about management. The difference between us and your managers is if there's negative feedback, we actually want it. And we don't want to drop from 3 to 85. So if you ever hear anything that we can do better, we'd sure like to hear it.
Well, the only thing I think you guys can do better right now is get to Ohio. get to Ohio, man, because, again, when you have people who have a genuine concern in making sure your rights are complied with, again, that's rare in today's industry. And I do thank the both of you for the job that you do. And again, I'll tell anybody, man, I look forward to working with you. In fact, I have referred a few people to call you guys directly, again, for the guidance that you can give them that they're just not getting. And Rob and I are trying to fill some of that void But folks, you got to get involved, man. You got to understand that stop depending on, totally depending on management to do the right thing. If you become injured, you have to read. You have to understand what your rights are, what steps you should follow. Again, we lay all that out. Well, not we, but it's all laid out for you on a CA-10. So, again, if nothing else, you grab that CA-10 and make it fun reading for you. So this way, if you become injured, you don't have to wait for management to go through the rigmarole of they don't know what to do. You can tell them what to do. And you can tell them based off of this form that's in your hands. Again, you have access to the knowledge.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you have access to the knowledge and you have access to authority. And I'm going to tell you, I hope I never have to fill out a CA form in the time I have remaining. But if I did, again, we're going to get that CA-10 and we're going to go right down the road. And let me tell you something. The latent function of you having that CA-10 handy and reading off what should happen to your supervisor, what you're really, the message you're really sending is, I know what's supposed to take place, and if you don't do it right, I'm going to tell. I'm going to tell. So for the fact that I have that CA-10 in my hand, I'm showing the management personnel that I know what's supposed to take place. And when they know that you know, then you force them to understand what needs to be done, and they will do it. But it's sad you got to force them, but maybe we'll force you. We'll make them fake it until they make it.
Right.
Hey, Ken, I think what I'll do is print out a bunch of CA-10s and then post them on the bulletin boards around the building.
That'll be excellent.
Well, that's what we tell when we come down to the union meeting. Chris says that all the time. We bring a stack of them and we tell all the stewards and everyone to do that. And when he asks if anybody has seen a CA-10, they all say no. So.
Yeah. Very few people know about it.
I said, look at the bottom right-hand corner of this form. It says last revised 1987. You know, the other day I had to redo the math in my head. I've been saying 31 years for a year. It's like, that's 32 years old. For 32 years, you haven't seen this thing posted on your bulletin board? It says post on employee bulletin board.
Nope.
You know, big bold letters. Yeah, you're telling me for 32 years... And then I'll ask, who's been in the Postal Service for more than 20 years? Everybody raised their hand, right? Like,
yeah.
The whole time you've been here, you've never seen this form? So take a stack of these, post it everywhere, and look, if your supervisor takes it down, no problem. Put another one up. The law says to post it. You can't get in trouble for posting it. You cannot get in trouble for following the law.
And just think about that. Just the fact that we have to say you can't get in trouble for posting information kind of tells you the environment in which we work.
No doubt.
It kind of tells you the environment. People get nervous about, if I post this, I'm going to get in trouble. This is a federal poster. Okay? You can't get in trouble for posting that.
Well, and let me ask you this. I know the answer, but let me ask you. It's a rhetorical question. So, based on your union contracts, who does the break room belong to? Employees or management?
Not sure.
Employees, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's just employee screen room. All right.
Yeah. So post. You can post them all throughout your break rooms. If they get taken down, put them back up.
And let me say this to the people who hear this. We're talking about posting a federal poster. Please don't interpret that and start posting, you know, elect Kenny Hodge for local president all over your break room. Don't do that right now. We want to stay within the guidelines. Hey, but listen, that brings our podcast to an end. And I want to say, hey, Chris and Zita, it is always a pleasure to converse with you and be able to let you share your knowledge with our folks. So we'll let you have last words before we sign off.
Well, just I keep telling people, just know your rights, know your responsibilities, know the CA-10. And, when they push, you got to push back harder until, these things stop. And until it does, it's going to continue. But it's nice having, folks like Mr. Hodge out there advocating for you. So, we appreciate that about you too, sir.
Hey, Rob, closing words.
Not really any closing words, just a request for Chris and Jenny. Could you all send Kenny that information on the fines or penalties for not doing the things properly?
Yeah.
Oh, sure, of course. I love that one. It's my favorite.
Yeah. I've been looking through here while we've been talking. I can't find it. I know it's there. I've seen it. I just can't remember where.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll send it to you.
Jenny, closing words, Jenny.
Oh, I just wanted to say, you know, I hope there's enough federal employees that are, you know, want to be a part of your union and try to make a difference. And when we do come out there, you know, when Chris comes out there to talk, that it makes a big impact. So we're hoping that you gather a lot of federal employees. And I know you said you're going to work on any federal employees that want to come out. And whatever I can do to help you with that, I will. So we are definitely looking forward to coming out there and educating all of those so things like this doesn't happen anymore.
Hey, this is co-producer Kenny Hodge from Hodge the Hodge on Blog Talk Radio with the Injury Compensation Podcast. Hey, good night. Talk to everybody later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.